Hi there, I'm Viv Joynes and welcome to episode 10 of the Live Beyond podcast, where I speak to people who step outside of their comfort zones to really achieve things they never thought they could. People that inspire me and will hopefully inspire others. So really excited that I've got to the 10th episode. Thanks so much for listening and for your support. As always, please don't hesitate to get in contact and make suggestions. And actually, it's interesting from a personal perspective, because obviously I get inspired speaking to the wonderful people that I chat to during the podcast episodes. And since finishing my kind of big challenge in January of last year, so Viv Runs Europe, where I ran from Poland to Spain, I haven't really taken on anything sporting-wise that really terrified me. And I started cycling a couple of months ago, road cycling, in a more serious way, building up to hopefully what will be a challenge in the summer that I'm excited about, but also quite terrified of. And in the run-up, I had a friend that was doing the Tour de Yorkshire race a couple of weeks ago, and thought just a couple of weeks before, I was like, okay, well, I'm going anyway. Why don't I just sign up to the middle distance, which is 85 kilometres, and I'll do it too. Little did I realise how terrified I'd be. And, you know, at the start line, it's that genuine feeling of obviously being excited. It was beautiful countryside, a beautiful part of the UK, but genuinely not really knowing whether I was capable of doing it and whether it was possible for me, because there was quite a lot of climbing. Anyway, it was tough, but I got there and it was great. It was such an amazing sense of achievement, and kind of felt quite proud of myself, as silly as that seems. So it's just, I just realised how nice it was again to take on something that did frighten me and overcome those barriers. So yes, the cycling journey continues. But enough about me. This week's podcast episode, I speak to a lady called Sally Goble. Now, Sally has a pretty important job at the Guardian newspaper, where she's head of quality. But she's also a swimmer that takes on some pretty crazy challenges. So they kind of vary from last year, for her 50th birthday celebration, so to speak, she decided to swim a mile each day in a different pool in London. So as you can imagine, the logistics around that were nuts. But I thought, what a brilliant idea. And she wrote about it on the Guardian website, which I'll share the link to in the notes page on the Live Beyond website. She's also swum the English Channel, amazing achievement, and we chat about that, as well as doing some Arctic swimming. And when I say Arctic, I'm not joking, I really mean Arctic, in February in Scandinavia. So we talk about how she got into swimming, the different challenges she's come across, the different failures that she's had to overcome, and really her love of water. She talks about it in such a beautiful way. So I'll stop talking. I really hope that you enjoy the episode. As always, please don't hesitate to provide feedback either on the Live Beyond website or on iTunes or Audioboom, where the podcast is also available. Again, thanks so much for your support in these first few episodes of the podcast, and happy listening. So I'm really excited to be sat with Sally this morning. Sally works at the Guardian newspaper as head of quality, but in her spare time, I think most of it's, well, I don't know, but a lot of it is definitely spent in a swimming costume, swimming, taking on all kinds of crazy adventures, from endurance to cold water swimming. And when I say cold, we genuinely are talking freezing, but we'll come on to that. And Sally has also swum the Channel. So pretty impressive challenges. But more recently, I just want to start with your most recent thing. I think it was the first thing I read about you, and it was your sort of 50th birthday kind of celebration, I suppose. Do you want to talk a bit about what you did?
I was coming up to my 50th birthday that year, and I was trying to think of a way to celebrate it. And since I've lived in London, which is about 20 years, I've kind of swum in lots of swimming pools. I'm not one of those kind of purist outdoor swimmers who hate swimming in swimming pools. So I decided that I'd just go on a bit of an adventure. So I decided to swim in 50 different swimming pools So for one swimming pool a day for 50 days, I'd swim a mile a day for 50 days. And so I kind of made a really big spreadsheet of all. Oh, and I decided that I'd only going to swim in public swimming pools. I didn't want to swim in any private pools. And I'd like seen pictures of, you know, the kind of the swimming pool at the top of the Shard and
wow.
and lots of like beautiful, there's a beautiful swimming pool in the RAC building, I think. And I was, but I really didn't want to do that because I kind of love the ethos of, I think swimming's really egalitarian. And I kind of really like going to kind of public swimming pools and swimming in them. So I decided to swim in, yeah, so I kind of made a list of all the swimming pools in London and then I kind of figured out how I could do it. Made a spreadsheet and, yeah, so I swam a mile a day for 50 days in 50 different swimming pools. I drove about 700 miles
oh my goodness.
In total.
And you do have a full-time job.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So a lot of early morning adventures and kind of late evening dashes off after work to kind of the middle of nowhere.
It was really nice as well, I think, because Sally writes about it on the Guardian website. It's all on the Guardian website, and it's brilliant writing. So if anybody wants to know about London swimming pools, I didn't even know there were more than 50 swimming pools in London, so I think that's probably a bit of an eye-opener for a lot of people. And I also like the idea, because I think when we think of kind of adventure and doing crazy things, everybody, we kind of think to going far away, and I quite like that you did it at home type thing and probably discovered parts of London that you hadn't seen.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. In fact, I found a swimming pool in West London that I drive past all the time and I didn't even know it was there. And when I was kind of Googling to find them all, I was like, no way, there's a swimming pool there. I hadn't even noticed. And now I go there quite often because I'm like in the area quite often. So I'm like, yeah, no, I can pop in there and it's a really quiet swimming pool. And another really interesting thing about that going on adventures, I think like particularly if you're a swimmer, but I'm sure it's true if you're a runner as well, you kind of go on the same routes, like you swim in the same swimming pool. Like most people swim in the same pool all the time because it's the one that's closest to them and it gets really boring.
Mm.
And actually just going and swimming in a different pool every day made the whole thing much more fun and much more interesting, like different lengths of pool, different types of people, different water temperatures. Yeah, it was lovely.
I think it's an amazing way to explore a city. And you also swam with other people, didn't you? And there was like people that had been like following your blog and following like what you've been doing in the past and sort of met up with you randomly as well.
Yeah, it was lovely. I swam with about two or three people who I'd never met who just decided that they want to come and swim with me. And like lots of people I'd known years and years ago who, you know, had read a bit of my blog and said, oh yeah, I want to come and swim with you. And I have no idea why people were kind of so engaged with doing it, but it was really, really lovely. I met at least four people who, you know, I hadn't seen for 10 years who just came and popped down and like randomly came, said, come and swim. You're coming to Clapham, aren't you? Come and swim with me in Clapham.
Oh.
And so kind of came and met me at, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning and swam and gave me a hug and then disappeared off.
That's so
sweet. It was really nice, yeah.
And did you, because I remember when I was reading about it, did you, it was sort of, because you usually do sort of two or three swims a week, is that right?
Yeah, a bit more than that, hopefully, but
okay.
Yeah.
But sort of longer distances. But you wondered whether doing kind of shorter distances every day would have an effect on your fitness. Did you find that it did in the end?
I think I did a little bit, yes. Not for the first 3 weeks or so. It didn't make me any faster, but I think it made me a bit fitter.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That kind of, yeah, the shorter sessions versus...
I certainly did more over a month than I do normally.
You?
Yeah.
Okay, because it was 56 miles overall, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah.
And having swum with 30 people, which I like. I like the kind of community. I like the fact that people sort of came together for it. And if anybody, it's obviously an amazing, the blog posts are an amazing resource for finding pools in London, as well as just making you want to swim. And I'm not much of a swimmer. I used to swim, but I don't swim that much now. But I have to say, reading Sally's blog makes you want to get in the pool, which is a really, really lovely thing. So I guess the kind of obvious question is, where did it all start and how did you get into kind of just starting swimming and then moving on to the more endurance based swimming, because you've done pretty long distances?
Yeah, I moved to London. That was what did it. I used to when I was younger, I used to do a bit of running, you know, for leisure, not anything massively competitive. although I'd done a few 10K runs. And I moved to London and I had no idea where to run.
Yeah.
Which seems a bit odd. And I'd lived a bit in the country and I'd kind of used to... And I thought, where do I run in London? I didn't really know where to run or where to start. And it was all a bit urban. So I just kind of started swimming.
Mm.
And I'd always swum as a kid and enjoyed it for leisure, but I'd never done any proper swimming. So I kind of went down to my local pool in Hackney, which was kind of quite scummy and not very nice. And I don't know why, but I just decided to kind of that I was going to start swimming more. So when I first went, I could only swim two lengths at a time.
Yeah.
I'd never swum as a kid in a club or anything like that. So I went and I kind of could swim two and then I'd have a rest. Then I'd swim two more and have a rest. And then, after a few weeks, I'd swim four and then have a rest and four until I could swim a mile without stopping. And I kind of just did that on my own.
And was that with the idea of getting somewhere? Was that just, I'm just going to swim as long as I can swim and then just see what happens?
No, I didn't really, apart from wanting to be able to swim continuously, I didn't really have any plan. I've never had a plan, ever.
I like that.
I think I'm just like, whip up your plans. Because if you said to me... If you said to me 20 years ago, you'll be in a swimmer and you'll swim the channel and da-da-da-da-da, I'd be like, that's a ridiculous thing to say.
Yeah.
So, you should just... Yeah. Be open to anything that happens. So I was kind of swimming along and I was swimming a mile. And in that swimming pool that I was swimming, there was a club.
Mm.
And there was a guy who was really nice called Raymond, who was like, he was this kind of really kind of funky, black, Hackney guy who ran a club. And the club were quite fun. They weren't like a really serious competitive swimming club. And he'd get like a kind of a beatbox on the poolside and like make everybody swim in time to the music, and it was great.
Brilliant.
And he just said to me one day, why don't you come and join us and swim with their club? So I started swimming with his club, which was a fun adult swimming club. And he also used to coach at a club in the Cali. And then he said to me, why don't you come down and swim with the Cali? And so that was me. I kind of started swimming with a kind of masters adult swimming club. But I was never very good.
When you say masters, does that... it's sort of obviously the older kind of... I don't know, when does masters start, actually?
I think it's 24.
That's amazing, isn't it? Really?
Yeah.
You become a master. Yeah, wow.
I mean, master is probably the wrong word for it.
Okay.
excuse me.
No, bless you.
Sorry.
Was it competitive? Do you do galas or is it just something?
Yeah, so I did a few galas and you can do and you cannot do. It's entirely up to you, depending on the swimming club. But the swimming club I swim at, and I have done for 20 years at the Canny, where I've been this morning, is like some people are competitive, some people aren't.
Okay.
Some people like just do it for the training. Mm. Some people do it for the coffee.
exactly.
And the cake.
exactly.
And I kind of did do a few galas, but I really hated them and I wasn't very good. I'm definitely not a sprinter. Mm. I don't have a kind of sprinting bone in my body. And I was always just like a bit of an also-ran. You know, if there were kind of three people in the race, I'd come third. And if there were 12, I'd come 12. So I was kind of... And also, I think swimming is kind of very kind of technique-led sport. So if you don't have great technique, you're never going to be brilliant. Which is not an excuse, but it's just the fact. So I was doing that for a few years and really enjoyed swimming with a club. And then I was kind of single at the time and I was looking to go on a holiday.
Mm.
And a friend of mine said to me, there's this guy I know who I swim with somewhere else, and he's setting up this swimming adventure holiday company. And like holidays are a nightmare when you're single. And he's like, why don't you go on one of these swimming adventure holidays? And I was like, that's like a really good idea. Not having ever swum in open water really very much at all. So I kind of went on this swimming holiday in the Greek Cyclades.
Nice.
Yeah, it was beautiful. And I just, I fell in love with it.
So what was the idea? Daily kind of...
Yeah, you swim between islands, basically.
Oh,
so that holiday. You just probably kind of get in a boat, you go to an island, you'll plop into the water and swim off to another island, escorted by boats and safety in a little kind of pod.
Super.
And it was amazing, because some people, were really fast and... comfortable in the water, and some people were like really fast but like really scared of the sea.
Okay.
And some people were really slow but like very serene.
Yeah.
And some people were just average, and like every, because it was like quite a daunting thing, everybody was just like really supportive and nice. Helpful of, you know, to one another, and everybody wanted to get everybody across, and it was like a completely different way of kind of doing your sport than kind of swimming in a pool, where it's all about the speed that you do and the distance you do. It's all about like, we're all going on this journey from here to there, and we've all got to get across together, and let's all encourage each other and help each other along, which I loved.
And then getting from A to B, because you can't get from A to B with your own team swimming very often, so being able to do that from islands is really satisfying, I'd have thought.
Yeah, I mean, there's a thing about like ending up somewhere under your own steam and then arriving on a beach where like there are a whole bunch of people kind of just lying on the beach sunbathing and idling away, and you just kind of stride up like, you know, something out of a Bond movie. Actually, in reality, it's not anything like a Bond movie. It's like so unlike a Bond movie, but you know.
You can imagine.
In my head.
You can imagine.
And then, and a few of the people I met on that holiday were kind of like really seasoned open water swimmers, and they kind of did swims along the kind of, I hadn't realised at the time, but all along the kind of British coastline, there were kind of lots of swims that you can do, you know, peer-to-peer swims and a mile here and a mile there that are run by kind of various different swim clubs. And a couple of people on that trip were kind of really into doing those swims. And so when I came back, I kind of started doing some of them with them. But as well as that, the person that ran this swimming holiday company, a guy called Simon Murray is a channel swimmer.
Okay.
And he he's Australian by birth, and he's tall, he's 6'4" and rugged looking, and you know, looks like a channel swimmer would look in your imagination.
And in the Bond style.
Totally. Yeah, he could totally do the kind of Bond scene. And as we were kind of sitting there in this Greek island, he would be kind of telling all the swimmers of stories of swimming the channel.
Okay.
And he turned round to me on kind of some occasion and said, "Oh, Sal, that'll be you one day." And I was like, "No, I'm not going to swim the channel." And, you know, he kind of said it a couple of times. "Oh, yeah, Sal, you know, well, when you swam the channel." And I was like, "Oh, no, I'm not going to do that. There's no way I'm ever going to do that."
Because it's... What's the distance of the channel? It's 21 miles.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. 21 miles of sea.
21 miles of sea, yeah.
Yeah.
And he kind of kept saying that to me. I was like, why is he saying that to me? I'm never going to do that. He's like the demigod, you know, that I will never be.
Yeah.
And nonetheless, I kind of came back to London and then spent the summer, like almost every weekend I'd go off and do another kind of little kind of kilometre race from, you know, the Brighton. There's a kind of peer-to-peer swim in Brighton.
Okay.
And there's one in Bournemouth and Eastbourne and Portsmouth and all these places. And I kind of started doing a few more of those. And it was like a beautiful way of getting outside of London.
And again, exploring.
Just going to the seaside. Yeah, and going to see places that you've never seen before.
Yeah. It's not actually that far, really.
No. And they were kind of lovely weekends, really happy weekends away.
Yeah.
And I loved it. And all the people, everybody I've met doing open water swimming are so supportive of one another. It's an amazing community.
It's amazing. I always like that camaraderie that is created. I think particularly, so, you know, if you run, I don't know, for example, you run a marathon and there's thousands of people, you don't really get that feeling. You do occasionally with the people that you speak to. And I personally haven't run ultra marathons, but the people that do, it just seems, it's a bit like what you were describing earlier, like there's such a supportive atmosphere of, you know, we're all, this is hard, so actually we're all in this together and we're going to support each other to do it. And that's totally different to just competition for competition's sake, and I'm going to beat the other person. I don't know, I just think it's really nice when that's created.
Yeah, I know, I completely agree. And I think you see the same thing on those kind of like overnight bike rides, like the Dunwich Dynamo and things like that, where, you know, you're riding overnight from London to the sea and everybody's just like, if somebody gets a puncture, somebody just stops and helps. Yeah.
Yeah, that's lovely. Okay, so, yeah, so these long... Well, so, that's, so okay, so these races were kind of 1 kilometre, 1 mile, and then you kind of got into bigger distances.
Yeah, it's a slippery slope.
Really? Because the other thing is, it's freezing.
Yeah, it's not... That's not freezing. I mean, swimming in the sea in Brighton in the summer is not freezing.
Okay, that's fair enough. It's not warm, I wouldn't have thought, but...
It's what I'd like to call
by your standards.
Fresh.
Fresh, okay. I wonder what the categories are.
Yeah, I don't think those things are never really cold in the summer. So I started doing that, and then the next year I thought, oh, well, that was nice. What can I do now? And so I kind of, the distances started creeping up. You know, a 5 kilometre swim here. And then I just thought, oh, there's a group in the UK called the British Long Distance Swimming Association.
Okay.
And they mostly hail from up north, and they're like a hardy lot. Yeah. And they kind of run a lot of events all over the country. And I think their shortest distance is, maybe the shortest distance is 3, but, you know, they probably won't get out of bed for a less than 5 kilometre swim, generally speaking. You know, there are no... They're kind of like a proper kind of old-fashioned swimming organisation. There's no wetsuits allowed. It's kind of properly, you know, hardcore swimming. And a lot of that is quite cold, and a lot of them are quite kind of more challenging distances, but they're amazing. So I started doing a few of those. I did a six-mile swim in Lake Bala, which is basically a lake which is has water that comes off Snowdon. So that's properly cold.
Yeah.
That was my first proper long-distance swim.
How do you train? Because presumably you're not open. You're not training in open water.
No, I did do a little bit, but mostly not. No, mostly in the swimming pool.
Right.
I did do a little bit of swimming in Dover, which is another story. And then I did another few swims with the British Long Distance Swimming Association. So I swam in Tor Bay. There's a swim that goes across Tor Bay and back.
Okay.
And a swim in... And again, it's kind of going and seeing places you'd never go. Mm. In Derwentwater, they have a swim that swims round Derwentwater, which is in Keswick and the Lake District. I did that one. So I did kind of started doing a few more of those. And every now and again, Simon from the holiday company would phone me up and say, Sal, when are you going to do the channel?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, so Sal,
wind won't go away.
Yes. And I was still completely adamant.
Okay.
That I wasn't going to swim the channel. I had no desire to do it. It just seemed like a massive and scary thing. But swimming in the Long Distance Swimming Association, I kind of met a few people who had, and it became kind of a bit more of a kind of a normal thing for people to do.
That's really interesting, because I think. Not indoctrinated, that's not the right word, or brainwashed isn't the right word either, but you're what is normal for you changes.
Yeah, that's exactly.
It's quite powerful.
Yeah, and you kind of forget, and, you know, when you first came in, I was saying, oh, all these people who've done these podcasts for you, they're all, like, you know, really amazing, and I'm just like a swimmer, and you know, you said, oh, yeah, but you swim the channel, and I was like, yeah, but I know loads of people who swim the channel.
Yeah,
to
that's
me,
your normality.
Yes, to me, that's not, I'm not an unusual person. To me, it's kind of quite, I mean, I know there are still... very few people, but to me it's kind of not a, it becomes less of a big deal.
I understand that, but yeah, you should still try to appreciate that it's pretty amazing. It's awesome, in fact.
So I was still like, no, I'm not going to swim the channel, I'm not going to swim the channel. And then I swam Lake Windermere, which is the longest swim pretty much that the British Long Distance Swimming Association do, which is 10.5 miles of Lake Windermere.
Wow. How long does that take?
It took me 6 hours and 45 minutes to swim.
Goodness.
And it's cold and it can be blustery and it's kind of quite a tough swim.
Because Lake Windermere is in the Lake District, isn't
it?
Yeah.
And the day that I swam it was absolutely glorious everywhere else in the country except for in Lake Windermere. And everybody said, oh, you've got a great day for it.
The rain cloud sits on top of the lake. It's like a cartoon.
And I swam the Lake Windermere, And then I came back, and it was amazing, and it was really tough. I mean, it was like, that was, of all the swims that I'd done, that was kind of like by far.
So I'm going to ask a bit of a non-swimmer ignorant question, but how do you fuel? Presumably you take, for that kind of distance, you need food and water.
So you have a boat with you and a support crew on all of these swims. I mean, and it's partly because of the, I mean, it's not just because of the distance, it's because of the cold, so.
Okay.
And it's also because you can't see where you're going when you're in the water, and it could be really wavy, so you always have to have a support crew with you. And they have, you get whatever you want to eat.
Okay.
Which kind of generally can be, you know, a hot drink or a kind of carbohydrate drink is quite common to drink. And bananas, I quite like bananas.
Yeah.
So you can have any of those sort of things.
And are they people you know in the boat generally, or is it event?
No, it's there's generally people you know. Sometimes they can pair you up with a stranger.
Okay.
Which is fine, and they're all amazing people, those people that crew for you that don't know you from Adam.
Yeah.
But I had a couple of people that I knew, my sister and somebody from my swimming club were in my boat. And they're great because it's like, this is going to sound terrible. It's properly miserable when you're swimming at those distances, because it's a completely different thing when you're on a bike or, you know, running. You know, when you're swimming, it's like properly sensory deprivation. Can't hear anything, can't smell anything. Mostly you can just see the bottom of the, you know, well, probably you can't even see the bottom if you're swimming in Lake Wheaton. You just see nothing, you hear nothing. You're just like there on your own with your own thoughts, and every like four strokes you stick up your head and you can see people on a boat beside you smiling and laughing, and you hate them.
Sounds great.
You've been selling it.
I want to do it now. So that's a good, so then why is it for the sense of achievement?
I think you probably enjoy 50% of I think I probably present 50% of every swim that I do is enjoyable, and then the other 50% is hideous.
That's fair enough.
But because it's an awesome achievement.
Exactly.
But you know, a lot of it is real, you know, you have a sense of humour failure.
At various different points.
Yeah.
I suppose, it's that whole thing that, I mean, I always talk about it, but the whole thing of just taking things on that scare you, genuinely scare you, that you don't think you can do.
Yes, completely.
Like, oh, I did it.
Yeah, exactly. That's why, and so many people say, oh yeah, I always wanted to swim the channel.
Yeah, it's true.
And I really didn't want to swim the channel, and that's why I did it.
Good enough reason.
Yeah, so I swam Lake Windermere, and I was still like, no, I'm not going to swim the channel. Going to swim the channel. And I got down to London, and I'd been down to back at home for about a week. And I was like, there's nowhere else to go now apart from the channel. And so I kind of made up my mind that I was going to do it.
But you describe the moment in your blog of sitting on the tube and deciding you're going to do it and just bursting into tears. Because, no.
Yeah.
But yes, I've got to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I guess it's like kind of relief and terror in equal kind of measures. And then I kind of phoned up Simon and said, I'm going to swim the channel. He's like, yeah, of course you are. And I phoned up my mom and I said, I'm going to swim the channel. She said, yeah, we knew you were going to swim the channel. I'm like, why did everybody apart from me know that I was going to swim the channel? Everybody. And my swimming club, I phoned them up. And they're like, yeah, we knew you were going to swim the channel.
Oh,
everybody knew. Everybody knew apart from me.
Yeah.
Or maybe I was in denial. And and then I was just terrified of what I'd committed to doing.
Yeah, because when you put it out there, you have when you have a sense of accountability, you've got to kind of do it then.
Yeah.
And I think that putting it out there is kind of the most important thing, because then you do have to do it.
They say tell six people, don't they?
Oh, is that what you really?
Yeah.
Yeah, then it makes sense. And then they hold you accountable. You're like, oh, really? Did I say that? Didn't mean it. So when did you decide? Because you did it first in 2005, right? Mm. So when did you decide you were going to do it?
So in 2004.
Okay.
I swam Windermere in 2004, and then I decided that I was going to do it. But in those days when it wasn't so popular, you could book a boat for the following year.
Wow!
So you have to. There's a bunch of boats that will escort channel swimmers.
Okay.
But there's, you know, maybe a dozen or so of them, so they could get, and there's only a kind of narrow period of time over which you can kind of swim the channel, so.
Oh, is there?
Yeah.
What, every year?
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah. So when is it?
So it's basically between the beginning of July and the mid to end of September, but you can only swim on neap tide. So you can basically 2 weeks out of the four of every month, okay, you can swim.
Right.
It's slightly changed now, but that was the case then when I swam it. And of those 2 weeks, there might be, you know, 3 days that are swimmable and 4 days that are too windy.
Okay.
So, you know, the number of people that get across every year is, you know, a fairly low, really.
Yeah.
For those, partly for those reasons. And so in those days, it wasn't so popular as it is now. So those, you could just phone up a pilot and say, book me in for next year. Mm. And now you have to book about 3 years in advance.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So you have it. So, and then, do you have a coach that kind of puts plans together for you?
No, you don't have a coach. Well, some people have coaches, but, you know, there's an amazing community of people. Yeah. So I knew lots of people, or I'd known by then, I knew a few people who had done it, who suggested to me what I should be doing.
Okay.
They didn't put a kind of coaching plan together. Mm. They said, you know, don't do any long distance swims until after Christmas. That was kind of about as much coaching as I, you know, as you might get. Sort of make sure you get your speed up by doing lots of training in the pool.
Okay.
And then you kind of make it up yourself. But then what happens is the really, really crucial part of training to do the channel is Dover training. So there's a big group of people who every weekend of the summer go down to Dover and train in Dover Harbour.
Right.
As a group.
And is that where you set off from when you swim?
You swim, you set off from Dover, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And where do you arrive in France?
Depends.
Okay. Well, yeah, I suppose that makes sense.
If you're really lucky, you arrive at Cap Grenet, which is the closest point.
Yeah.
But very few people.
Okay.
Most people have to swim much further.
Right, okay.
Yeah. The French coast recedes, so the 21 miles is a kind of a headland called Cap Grenet.
Okay.
And then if you don't hit that headland, the land falls away.
Okay.
And you have to swim further. So basically, if you're a really speedy swimmer, you land on Cap Grenet.
Yeah.
If you don't, you then generally have to swim another 2 or 3 or 4 miles.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, gosh. Mm. That does add it on just a bit. Okay, so there's groups. So you end up swimming with other people when you're training?
You swim in the same harbour as other people.
Okay.
So there's a kind of big group that go down there. Dover Harbour's massive. It's like 3 kilometres from side to side.
Right.
And there's a kind of group that's run by an amazing woman called Frieda Streeter, whose daughter is the person who swam the channel more times than anybody else.
And she, how many times is it?
43, I think she trained. Yeah. Amazing swimmer.
Yeah.
And her mum used to sit on the beach and kind of train everybody and tell them how long to swim for. And,
oh, wow.
Which is amazing because it's really, really tough.
Yeah, I can
imagine. The training is horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, the training is like more horrible than any actual event that you would do.
Yeah.
And so every weekend from May until my swim in September, both Saturday and Sunday, I'd like leave London at 6 o'clock in the morning and drive down to Dover to be there for 9 o'clock in the morning, train for however long, and then drive back and then do the same the next day for 3 months.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So that's, I'm trying to work out roughly how many hours a week you're doing, probably quite, yeah, must have been about 20 hours or something, was it?
Well, on the weekend that I swam more down in the harbour than anything else, I swam 15 hours solid over the course of the weekend.
Wow.
As well as the sessions I was doing in London during the week. Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty phenomenal. That's a real commitment. I mean, people say, you know, I found marathon training. Like, this is too time consuming. I don't think it really is in reality.
Yeah, it's a proper serious thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so a year of building up, presumably, gradually the distances to actually taking it on. And then you tried it for the first time in 2005. 5.
Yeah.
And what, so how did that go? Because I know that time wasn't successful.
Yeah. I'd been kind of quite ill over the summer. I'd got pneumonia, they said.
Goodness.
I mean, I guess I had a really bad chest infection anyway.
Yeah.
But I was still trying to train. Coughing and wheezing a lot, and kind of had a few weeks off, but I kind of was still kind of committed to trying to do the swim. So in the time when I was about to do the swim, I set off probably not being 100% well, and I set off when it was an absolutely beautiful day, sunny, the water was like glass, you couldn't have a better day in a lot of ways, and it was boiling, it was like 30 degrees, the air temperature. Okay. I mean, it was amazing. But what they don't tell you, and what I've since learned, is that if it's like really hot and flat during the day, then it gets very, very windy at night, because the kind of difference in temperature between the land and the sea is really great, and it makes it extremely windy.
Okay.
So, which is fine if you kind of set up early and you're quick enough to get across before nighttime. But if you're not, like me, you suddenly have really, really bad windy weather at the end of your swim. So that's what happened to me, was it just kind of got windier and windier, and it was really, really tricky last few hours. And by the time it got to, I'd swum for 21 hours.
Wow.
I was still a few hours worth of swimming away from the French coast.
Oh my goodness.
And it wasn't, if it had been getting calm again, I probably could have gone on a bit, but it was just getting, you know, it was just staying really, really windy. So we kind of ended the swim. I ended the swim.
Oh, what a difficult decision.
Yeah. Yeah.
That must have been pretty brutal.
Yeah, but kind of, you know. Yeah. I guess it is tricky. But then those things, you know, you learn.
Yeah, exactly.
Some people don't, but my philosophy is you just, like, pick yourself up and you learn from your mistakes, and, you know, you can't. You know, it's how you respond to failure. It's not the failure itself. It's the, you know, how you learn from it and live with it and move
on. What were the main things that you learned from it? From the first...
Oh, that I probably have to swim faster, okay. I guess, and work harder.
Yeah.
And also that I didn't want to... So a very, very good friend of mine had also made an attempt that year, and she'd also been supposed to be swimming the year before.
Okay.
And the year before... she'd not managed to get away because it had been really windy, and she hadn't even had a chance to swim, and she'd done all the training.
Oh, no.
And then she came in 2005 and her swim was stopped because she was ill. She basically got water in her lungs and couldn't breathe, as she spent the night in hospital. So she'd had like 2 years of preparing and not managing to get across, and I'd had a year of not getting across and being ill. And so I remember kind of phoning her and saying, right, Katie, come on, we're going to do it next year. We're going to go as early as we can, you know, in the year, rather than, because it's horrible having to train the whole of the summer and wait, because I'd gone on the 2nd of September the first time, seeing everybody get across and just being anxious and being worried about injury as well, because the more training you do, the more likely you are to get injured or be ill. And so I was like, right, we're going to book really early for next year, and we're going to, you know, just do a kind of smash and grab operation.
Yeah.
So I knew I needed to get faster. And I just wanted to go really early and get it over and done with, so I didn't have the chance of getting ill.
Yeah.
So that's what I did.
Amazing. So another year of similar training, but working on speed.
And I did some more running as well to help my fitness. Yeah.
That's
so I kind of had a like, funny. It was kind of a bit like, you know, the eye of the tiger. I'd be like getting up early in the morning and running to the pool and swimming. So I did a bit more of that as well. And I did a little bit of weights as well.
Okay, yeah. That would help with speed, presumably.
Yeah, and to prevent injury.
Yeah.
So...
And then back at the start line.
Back at the start line, yeah.
And how did that go?
Yeah, it was... I mean, I'm not saying it... Well, because everybody says to you when you swim the channel, they say... As long as you put one arm in front of the other, you'll get across eventually, and you'll hit landing. Like, no, that's not true. That's really not true. And, you know, when you have that kind of moment of just thinking, you know, so many things can go wrong with any swim.
Yeah.
Whether the weather gets diabolical, or you're engine, you know, of your boat gets something stuck in the propeller, which has happened to somebody, or, you know, you become ill from no reason of yourself, you have an injury, or the weather's against you and your swim is interminable, or, you know, you can mentally implode, which also happens for, you know, quite a number of people.
Yeah.
I knew it wasn't true that, you know, as long as you put one arm in front of the other, you'll get across. I knew it wasn't true, so I was kind of much more nervous the second time around.
Yeah.
I would love to say that I was more confident, but I don't think I was, really.
Well, you knew, I suppose, the fact, when you don't know anything, it's just, you just have to launch yourself. Whereas you kind of knew the pain, and you knew the pain, and the stuff, like, cause it can't be that pleasant.
Yeah. And also, I'm, like, a strong believer that you should just, like, be slightly in denial. I mean, some people say, oh, I want to go and crew on somebody else's boat so that I can see what it's going to be like. And I'm like, seriously, you do not want to know what it's going to be like because it's really horrible.
But just coming back, so you presumably you don't do this in a wetsuit or anything?
No.
You're just, okay.
One cosy, one hat, one pair of goggles.
And don't people put, like, goose fat and stuff on them?
They used to in the olden days, but that's more to stop chafing because you get really badly...
Yeah.
Chafed.
Yeah, ouch.
In all sorts of ways. So you use Vaseline nowadays. Yeah. Most people use Vaseline and put a bit on. Some people mix it with a bit of lanolin, which is wool fat.
Oh, okay.
But that's... I don't know why they do it, really, to be honest. Right. I think it might be just, like, some sort of throwback. People say it's supposed to help with the wind.
Right.
But I'm not sure. It smells really horrible and it's easiest to get off, so why would you bother?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you just kind of smear yourself in... lots and lots of Vaseline all over your kind of rubby bits.
Yeah.
And you put a couple of glow sticks on you so that you can be seen in the dark.
Okay.
And an awful lot of sunscreen.
Of course, yeah.
And that's about it. And then you set off.
Okay.
With your boat and your crew.
Yeah.
And you could start at 3 o'clock in the morning or you... Oh, well, so you don't know when you're going to go.
Oh, right.
Right,
okay.
So... you have a kind of a week's worth of time period that you're allocated, you know, from November the 4th, you know, not November, June the 4th to, you know, June the 10th, you'll be swimming on that tide.
Right.
And you have to phone your boat pilot every night at 6 o'clock when the weather forecast happens. And they look at the weather forecast and they try and work out whether it's going to be a swimmable day.
Okay.
Because it's, you know, if it's even...
tides could take you.
Well, it's the wind. It's not the tide. I mean, the tides do take you all over the place, but if it's windy, then it's not...
Okay.
Possible. You know, you can swim in a bit of wind, or you can start swimming when it's really flat, and then if it goes windy, well, tough luck.
Yeah.
But, you know, you don't want to start off when it's kind of, you know, force five.
No.
Or, you know, you just, there's no point really.
Okay.
Unless you're super strong.
Okay.
So you kind of phone your pilot every day. Yeah, am I ready to go? Am I going? Am I going? No, you're not going. So you have this kind of hideous week of anticipation.
That's quite a build-up.
It's really horrible. And you're sitting there and you have to eat something. And you know that at 6 o'clock in the evening, you've got to eat because you might be going down to Dover and you need to fuel. So you're, like, feeling really sick. So you're sitting there, like, shoveling in a bowl of pasta.
Yeah.
And you really, really don't want to eat it, but you know that you've got to and you're feeling sick. And then, like, at 7 o'clock... Yeah.
Yeah.
And then at 7 o'clock, you have to phone your boat pilot. So you phone your boat pilot and they go... No, stand down. You're like, oh, I could have enjoyed my pasta.
Damn it.
For a whole week.
And is that what happened to you? Was it the whole week?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. It could be the first day.
Yeah.
You'd just be lucky and like, oh, great, okay, fantastic, here we go.
But generally speaking, it's like, oh, is it? And yeah, so you just go when you...
Okay. And what time did you set off in the morning?
I set off at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
And some people set off at 3 o'clock in the morning or midnight. Depends what the tide's doing, because you go at low tide.
Okay.
So whenever low tide is, you go. So it means you kind of jump in your vehicle and you drive down in the middle of the night to Dover.
Wow.
You meet at the marina at, you know, an hour before you're supposed to swim and unload all your gear onto the boat.
Okay.
And your crew and huge amounts of stuff. You wouldn't believe how much stuff you need just for a swim.
What do you need? Obviously you need nutrition.
Yeah, so a lot of water.
Yeah.
So water for you, water for all your crew.
Yeah.
Food, gear, so you're not allowed to touch the person who's swimming, so you need to have kind of complicated systems of delivering them their food, whether that might be, so generally kind of a very tall kind of plastic beaker with, you kind of can drill holes in them and like put wrap string around them so you dangle them down over the side of the boat. Oh, wow. You're in a really big boat, the crew are in a really big boat. Well, when I say really big, you know, kind of 30-foot long boat, so, you know.
It's not a little dinghy.
No. Because it's quite harsh out there, you know. Yeah. You wouldn't want to be in a dinghy.
No.
So you're
it's
in
my
a,
ignorance.
In a, no, but everybody, a lot of people just say, oh, did you have a boat? And you're like, yeah, because you can't see the other side, you know. It's quite
you could
far.
End up swimming down to the south of France. Well,
I think the few people who have swum without a boat have died.
So, oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Because how would you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so then you set off into the, you know, the day or the night. And...
yeah. And was there any point during the second swim where you thought that... how do you do it? Do you break it down into sort of smaller bits?
Yes.
Yeah. Taking the whole thing yeah. is a bit...
yeah, yes, you can't. You no. absolutely can't do that. You just, yeah. like, run the hell in the other direction. Yeah. If you
do... I'm going back to London.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, no! You just have to, like, so we, there's another phrase, there's a channel swimming full of phrases, like, swim to your next feed.
Okay.
So you, like, work out a feeding plan of how frequently you want to be fed, and usually it's like, okay, not for the first 2 hours, you're fine for 2 hours.
Okay.
And then, like, every hour for the next 4 hours, and then every 40 minutes for the next 3 hours,
oh,
and then
right,
every
okay.
half an hour, so it gets more and more frequently
yeah.
The longer you've been in the water.
And you find, were you taking solids in? Like, could you continue to digest? Because it's quite...
yeah, it's quite hard. So you have a carbohydrate drink generally,
yeah.
and you can get some that are kind of neutrally flavoured, so you can put them in with anything
yeah.
else. So for the first few hours, you probably just have a drink, and it's faster to just to drink than it
yeah.
is to eat. And you want your feeds to be as short as possible, because the longer you stop... So say you in a whole thing, you have, like, 40 feeds, because you're, you know, that if you spend a minute in each feed, that's 40 minutes, which means you could miss the tide or miss the cap
yeah,
and swim for hours
true.
Longer. So it's all like your feeds have to be very, very fast. They're not comfort breaks or anything.
Okay.
So you just chuck something back. So bananas I ate a lot of. You have to have things that are kind of quite easy to slip down your throat, because your mouth starts swelling up because of the salt water.
Oh, God.
So, and then some people have difficulty swallowing.
Okay.
Because their throat has so
wow.
closed up because of the salt water. So you have to have things, you can't have things that are dry, really.
Yeah.
It has to be kind of quite slippery
yeah.
and moist. So I think I had some, like, Heinz vegetable soup, and that was, like, the most amazing, amazing thing. I was like, oh, that's like heaven. After salt water for 14 hours, you know. And yes, so you just swim from feed to feed to feed. And then whenever you're miserable, you say, oh, I'm miserable, they go... we'll talk about it in your next feed. And then, you know, you swim to your next feed, and then you'd forgotten about it, you know.
Okay.
We say, can I have some paracetamol? Give me some at your next feed.
Okay.
And so it's just a way of kind of keeping you
going.
And, you know, it's amazing how you can be really in the depth of misery 1 minute, and then half an hour later you're fine again. Or conversely, you can be, like, really, really happy.
Yeah.
And then you can just be, just some switch will go and you're really miserable again. And then you can be really happy again.
But was there anything else that kind of got you through those horrible bits? Or was it just sort of, you know, you just kind of flip in and out of moods?
Oh, no. So I said to myself, it's only 24 hours, which is...
okay.
That's what I was like, no matter how horrible I'm feeling now,
mm-hmm.
this time tomorrow... it will all be over.
Okay.
That's it. And I was just like, just 24. 24 hours is nothing.
Exactly.
I mean, it's insane, because you could be going, oh my God, I'm going to be swimming for 24 hours.
Yeah.
That's hideous. But you're like, no, it's just a day. What is a day?
Yeah.
A day is nothing. You know?
Because the psychology of it is so important.
Mm. I think, I mean, they say with long distance swimming, it's like 80% mental,
yeah,
20% physical. And
yeah.
I do think that's true. A lot of people could do it physically. And a lot of people say to me, oh, I could swim the channel. And I look at them and I think, oh, no, you definitely couldn't swim the channel.
Oh, right.
You could do it physically, but there's no way you could do it mentally.
Yeah.
The mental training is so much harder than the physical training.
Yeah.
And you learn that when you're doing the training.
Yeah.
You learn how to make your brain cope with that
stuff.
Because
it's interesting, because I, when... so my thing is generally for running is one foot in front of the other as long as I'm moving forward. But as you said, that doesn't really work for you with swimming. So everyone has their own thing. So some people probably do use that as long as I'm, you know, one stroke, two strokes, I'm moving ahead.
Mm.
But for you, that doesn't work. So you've got.
But
to
sometimes
find.
You're not moving ahead though. So you're true. You know, you're really not. Backwards. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. You know, fairly often. You know, well, you can think that, but you can also, yeah, you have to break it down because it's such a long thing.
And did you find, as you were getting closer to the end, you had kind of an adrenaline rush and it was easier, or did you find that it was harder?
No, the end was absolutely hideous.
Was it?
Yeah. And it was particularly hideous for me because I had exactly the same day as I had the first time.
Oh.
It was absolutely boiling hot.
Right.
And flat.
Oh, no. Are you serious?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, and that was amazing.
Yeah.
And then at about, as it got dark, I guess, because maybe then the air temperature goes down.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. As it got dark, it started kicking off and it was really rough. And it was really rough. And that means that the boat is then has difficulty staying with you because they're being blown away and around. And they find it difficult to go slowly as a swimmer anyway. And then you're separated from the boat and you're in the pitch black and they can't see you and you can't see them and you're kind of constantly catching them up, having to catch them up. Okay. So basically they go ahead and then they stop.
Right.
And they wait for you to catch them up.
Okay.
And then they go ahead again. And that's miserable because actually you just feel like you're behind something that's running away and playing some hideous game with you of catch up.
Oh, God.
And I couldn't see the coast. So that's probably like a good thing and a bad thing.
Mm.
Because if you're swimming during the daylight hours, and you can see how far away the coast is, and it's going further away, or, you know, the land's dropping away, it's probably very demoralising. Yeah, but true. I had absolutely no idea how close I was at any time. I was just basically in survival mode, and it was really horrible.
Ouch.
And I kind of, I think I, at a certain point, I kept stopping and saying, wait for me, wait for me.
Oh.
And then at some point they said, Sally, every time you stop, we're going back 100 metres.
Really?
Stopping.
Oh, God.
And so then I just knew I had to get my head down and
keep going. Trucking.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. And what was the water temperature during this?
Probably 16, 17.
Okay.
Centigrade.
Okay. Wow. Okay, so, and so, yeah, but you obviously did it, and was it 18 hours, 52 minutes?
Yeah.
Blimmin' heck, that is a long time in the water.
Yeah.
And is it the hardest thing you've ever done?
Yeah, undoubtedly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds, it's just amazing. And did your friend do it, actually?
We did it on the same day.
No way!
Yeah, yeah.
And did she complete it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Brilliant.
And she had an amazing swim, because it was that beautiful day, that beautiful weather, and she's a faster swimmer than I am. And she arrived in this town in on the French coast called Wisson, which is beautiful. It has an amazing promenade.
Okay.
And it was a beautiful sunny day, and there was an amazing sunset. And so there were hundreds of people on the promenade at Wisson when she arrived on the beach, all like cheering for her.
Oh, wow.
I was like, and obviously she was like, ugh. And I arrived at like 3 o'clock in the morning at the foot of a dark cliff. Nobody.
But slight contrast and experience.
But I was like, yeah, she so deserved that, because that was like her third year of attempting it. Yeah. I was like so happy that she got like a really nice, memorable finish to her swim. I didn't even have a photograph because.
Do you not?
No,
well, it was dark.
It was dark and it was like really bad weather and it was really rough and they just needed to get me in. They were like, you swim in with somebody else. Somebody comes in with you for safety.
Right.
And they were like, I stood there and they were like, right, we've got to, gave me a hug and said, right, we've got to go back right now. So that's it. It's like completely.
So you just jumped back in the boat?
No, you have to swim back to the boat. But at which point your body has just shut down.
Yeah, because you relax.
Yeah.
It's like, I've done it.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got to swim back to the boat. Yeah. And then you get back on the boat and
then it takes,
back.
Yeah.
Wow.
So then you have a really horrible time going back.
Oh, but how did it feel? Was it like elation or?
At that point,
Probably not, just exhaustion.
Yeah, just not misery, relief.
Okay.
Relief, yeah. And exhaustion. And you're generally quite sick as well, usually.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
So you just spend sort kind of 3 hours clutching a bucket and being freezing and exhausted and throwing up. Yeah.
Sounds great.
But then you're elated when you get back onto dry land.
You get the elation.
Yeah.
You get the sunrise, probably.
Yeah, exactly. The sunrise when I got back.
Oh my goodness.
But it is.
It's just phenomenal. I think it's just amazing. And as you said, like for you, it's kind of your normality. It's definitely not my normality. I just think it's brilliant. So what have you been doing since the channel swim? But obviously you continually train.
Mm.
But do you train for things or?
Yeah, but I trained for a couple of years after that. So I tried a couple of years after that to do a kind of a swim that nobody had ever done before in Scotland.
Hmm.
That didn't kind of quite work out, and it kind of took a lot of effort, so I didn't do that. And then I trained some kids from a school in Hackney to do channel relay. So I kind of took 16 kids from a swimming pool, swimming club in Hackney. And they did 2 channel relays. It was amazing. They're aged between 12 and 17.
How fantastic.
And that was brilliant. It was really, really a proper highlight.
Yeah, and so were these kids that could already swim?
They were from a swimming club.
Okay, right.
But similarly, I mean, they were all like amazing swimmers, but a lot of them were, it's very challenging. It's a really challenging thing to do, to swim in a big open sea that's cold, and you can swim at night, and a lot of it is properly tough, and the
it's
kids
real
life
were lessons.
Yeah,
actually.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah. So that was a brilliant thing to do. I really enjoyed doing that.
Yeah, I can imagine. Because what I didn't say, or I probably should say, is because there aren't that many people that have swum the channel. So I think overall, these are the latest statistics, I think it's 1,619.
Mm.
And then there's been 2,122 swims by that many swimmers, 1,619 swimmers. And what's interesting is I think 37% are female, which I found, I expected it to be more kind of towards the male, and the average age is 35 years old, so presumably there's a whole span of different ages that do it, which is just brilliant. Cool, okay, so these kids, that's brilliant, I love that.
Mm. And then a group from my swimming club did a relay, I think 2 years after that, in 2010.
Yeah.
So there was another 5 people, and it's really interesting because in my swimming club, I'm one of the worst swimmers, ironically, in terms of pool swimming. And there are a lot of amazingly good swimmers in our swimming club, but there are not that many people who would be like, yeah, I'll swim in cold water, I'll swim in the sea. A lot of people are scared of the sea.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are scared of not being able to see the bottom, or scared of swimming at night, or scared about the sea life, or scared of the cold. And so it was really amazing having taking a relay of 5 people, all of whom were better and faster swimmers in the pool, and like kind of going through the training with them of acclimatising to the cold and going down to Dover and that, doing the actual swim. So that was really nice as well.
It must be nice to help people overcome their barriers in a sense, like, you know.
Exactly.
It's sort of I always look at things and I'm like, oh, if they can do it, maybe that means I can do it.
Mm.
And it's kind of, it makes you want to do things.
Mm.
And I'm sure, I'm sure it was massively inspiring you having done it for them.
Mm. Mm. And they probably think if she can do it, then I can do it.
Well,
they're wrong.
Which is brilliant.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
So you've done it twice. So how long was the stint? How does it work, a relay, a channel relay?
You spend an hour swimming. So you generally, traditionally there are 6 people, and you swim for an hour in rotation until you get there.
Right.
Basically. So, and the relays are generally faster. So you generally have to swim twice.
Yeah.
Sometimes if you're unlucky, you have to swim 3 times.
Okay. But generally, quite fun.
Yeah, it's fun if you don't get seasick.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely fine.
Okay.
I never get seasick, ever. I never have. But there was a woman on our relay who was, like, terribly seasick all of the time. And actually, then you find that kind of the only place that you'll feel human is when you're swimming.
Yeah.
When you're in the water for some reason. Yeah. But then you have to swim on an empty, completely empty stomach, generally. Yeah. So it sounds like it's fun.
But not always.
Not always and not for everybody.
suppose you're cold as well, having just been in the water, and you've got to warm up and all this kind of stuff. Okay, and then anything... Because I know I want to talk about your recent... Was it February, your kind of Arctic crazy... I think... I mean, yeah. So, what was it? It was the International Winter Swimming Association World Cup.
Yeah.
That is cool.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
Really, I mean, really cool.
Yeah, every sense of the word. So that was February of this year, but was there anything between kind of the second channel swim?
I still do like to do some long distance swimming.
Okay.
So, but not quite as hardcore as that. So I did a relay with a friend of mine in Zurich. You can do the length of Lake Zurich, which is 16 miles.
Wow.
So I did with a friend of mine who lives in Zurich. We did a 2-person relay of Lake Zurich. So that was really good fun. Yeah. So that was a couple of years ago, and I'm doing a few 10-kilometer swims. So 10-kilometer swimmers. I'm doing one in about 3 weeks.
Because they're called swimming marathons, aren't they?
Yes, I think it's exactly the same. It's exactly the same effort as a running marathon, basically. Because the fastest 10K swimmers take about 2 hours.
Okay.
A normal person will take 3.5. So it's kind of
A similar
distance. So you can get away with doing some...
Still a hell of a long way to swim.
And it will take me 4.5 hours to swim.
And for those ones, you have a boat
It depends where it is. So the one that I'm doing in a few weeks is on a river. So they have some kayaks generally. A river's easier, so you just follow the river.
Yeah.
Depends on the river.
Go the wrong way.
Yeah, I mean, if it was the Thames, it might be a bit difficult. But it's a quiet river. So just swimming down that.
Nice.
So there's still a few challenges to...
Yeah. And is there anything, I suppose, kind of bucket listy that you kind of want to do?
Oh, there are loads I want to do, but I'm quite slow now. I'm much slower than I was when I did the channel. And so some things are kind of slightly off limits because they have...
Okay.
And also nowadays, there are kind of quite a lot of swims that are kind of... that are wetsuit compulsory.
Oh, really?
There's a kind of big drive towards health and safety.
Oh, gosh. As there is with lots of things.
Yeah. And so some swims nowadays are, wetsuit compulsory, so... But I refuse to wear a wetsuit.
Do you?
Yeah.
Why?
I kind of think it's cheating.
You're a purist.
Yeah.
Okay, now I understand that. Given what you've done, I think... Yeah.
I've earned the right to say that.
Look at me.
I think, if people want to enjoy water and swim in a wetsuit and they can't do it without it because they get too cold or they worry, then, they just want to go and swim in the sea, fine, wear a wetsuit. But I think in terms of a kind of competition or a challenge, I think you want to make a challenge challenging.
Yeah.
And, I guess to me, I would rather somebody swam 500 metres without a wetsuit than 2 miles with a wetsuit. I think it's kind of more of a pure kind of...
Okay.
But
I think that's fair.
I think that's controversial.
Possibly. Like a bit of controversy. what's on the list?
I would love to swim from Bolivia to Peru in Lake Titicaca.
Wow.
Because it's the highest navigable lake in the world.
Hmm.
And my mum was born in Peru.
Oh, wow.
And actually, Bolivia and Peru are both on Lake Titicaca, so you could just make it a shorter swim. It could be a couple of hundred metres, to be honest.
Who would know?
Yeah, exactly. Nobody would know. I'd kind of like to do that. Maybe I'd like to do the Straits of Gibraltar, but that's kind of quite windy, and it's quite often you can... So that's swimming between Europe and Africa.
How far is it?
It's not so far. It's a few miles. It might be kind of 6 or 7 miles or something like that. So it's, probably like, 3-4 hours swim. It's not a massive swim.
Oh, okay.
It's very challenging because it's really windy and it can often be quite turbulent. So it's basically where the Atlantic meets the Mediterranean. Yeah. And they basically kind of go, ooh. Okay. And like, you know, this is just really windy and really wavy.
Yeah.
Down in a really narrow neck of water. Yeah. So yeah, it can be quite challenging. But sometimes I've heard that people go there and they kind of, you know, book and they sit there for 3 weeks and then they just have to go home again. Oh, so really? I don't know, it's quite a tricky one. But that, you know, there's something romantic about swimming from
from here to there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
From continent to another.
I can't help but look at a map and go, ooh. I wonder if somebody swam from here to there. That would be nice. I'd also like to swim in all the Lidos in the UK. That's another thing I'd secretly in my head. I'd like to go on a road trip and basically...
Amazing.
Because there are loads.
So Lidos, are they always outdoor pools?
Yeah, and they're not necessarily man-made proper pools. You can get kind of sea Lidos and things where just like a kind of a, you know, slightly kind of fenced in bits of sea.
Do you know how many of them there are?
Well, I'm making a list.
Okay. Another spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, I can't wait.
And there's one on Ilkley Moor.
Yeah.
You're like, how mad is that to go up to Yorkshire and not be on Ilkley Moor and come across Ilkley Lido?
I know.
I bet you that's really bleak. It sounds somewhere I'd really like to go.
Probably. I just love it because, okay, you go to do something in a specific area, but you just explore so much in the process.
Mm.
I haven't done that much UK tourism, and I've done a lot more recently, and it's just, you just realise how much beauty there is in this country, and it's just amazing. Right, back to Arctic swimming.
Okay, back to Arctic, yes.
Arctic swimming. Yeah, how come?
Somebody asked me to go.
Really?
So I swam a few years ago in Finland in the Arctic.
Okay.
Probably... Again, about kind of 8 or 9 years ago, I got into bad company. went to Finland to the kind of World Ice Swimming Championships in Finland. But that was like quite a few years ago. And I haven't done as much cold water swimming in the last few years.
Okay.
Because I haven't really needed to. And I do it every now and again, but I don't do it so often. I mean, I really love it. I swim on New Year's Day, every New Year's Day in Scotland.
Wow.
I have done for the last... 12, 13 years.
Okay.
With my family, who all have to do it with me.
They have to do it with you. Okay. Yay! Can't wait for New Year's Day.
Exactly. Yeah. Hangover? No excuse.
Oh, but that would stop.
It really does. Yeah.
So what is the water temperature then?
Yeah, a couple of degrees. Yeah.
Balmy.
It's more the waiting around outside, actually, which is the tough thing.
I can imagine.
And somebody just said to me, do I want to go and kind of write an article about being in Sweden, and by the way, you have to swim. And I was like, yeah, why wouldn't I go and do that?
Amazing.
So yeah, it was beautiful. I was very nervous this time.
Were you?
Yeah. I haven't done it for a while, and
okay.
I think if you're swimming in that cold water in the winter, you have to be like well acclimatized for it not to be like properly, you know, shocking. And I hadn't done quite as much as I had the last time I went to Finland, so yeah, it was quite nerve wracking.
Because I love the way you described it, that they like chainsawed out this pool into the ice,
yeah,
right, and there's sort of 4 lanes of swimming, and then there were people at the side sort of banging the water so that the ice didn't reform.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Again, this is no wetsuit, this is like this in a swimming costume. And what did you say, what was it, -3 degrees waiting at the start line?
Probably.
What?
And then only -3 though.
And then the water temperature was 0.3 of a degree. I mean, okay, so, and you did the 25-metre breaststroke. I just don't know how you move when you get in, or you just move very quickly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's adrenaline that gets you through those things, actually.
Yeah.
And so I think, like, winter swimming, in that sense, it's like bungee jumping. People say to me, like, why do you do that? Like, my swimming friends say to me, why do you do that? Why do you go, like, to some freezing place, cold place, and swim for, like, 2 minutes? What's the point? And you're like... Because like you have the 2 hours beforehand where you're really nervous,
yeah,
and then you have like the 30 seconds where you're swimming, which is painful, and then you have the 4 hours afterwards where you're warming up. Uh-huh. And so you think it's just like 30 seconds, but actually it's like 6 hours of your life. It's like bungee jumping. Like, why would you why would anybody bungee jump?
Yeah.
I think, you know, that to me is just a crazy thing to do.
Jumping into Arctic water, not so crazy.
But it's the same thing, isn't it? I mean, hypocritical saying I wouldn't bungee jump because, you know...
Yeah, but the best thing is that you did it with a comedy shark hat.
Yeah, well, why not?
I think that is great.
But then, you know, I had this thing where I thought, I need to wear a hat because sometimes they kind of like, they wear kind of slightly odd hats. And I kind of thought, what kind of hat can I wear? And I kind of Googled, you know, shark hat, I think, for some reason. And bought one on Amazon. And I kind of took it with me. I thought, oh, this is hilarious. And I got there and I put this shark hat on. And like, I didn't know anybody there. There were all these people from all these different countries. And I put my shark hat on. And then I just suddenly thought, oh no, they're going to think that I'm a really fast swimmer because I've got a shark hat on. And actually, I'm really slow. And they're going to think, oh, she's really mean. She's going to beat all the competition. She's got a shark hat on. I was like, no, no, really.
It's just funny.
Yes, exactly.
Get with the program. Oh, brilliant. Mm. I just think that's amazing. So do you think you'll do more Arctic swimming? What do you think?
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I love Scandinavia. I kind of quite like being cold.
Oh, okay.
Quite like the shock. It's quite a visceral thing to do.
Mm.
It's not... because swimming in the summer is kind of beautiful and contemplative and relaxing. It can be anyway.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of... But swimming in the winter is like a really, really, really different thing. It's just like harsh and shocking.
Yeah.
And brutal. It's like probably walking down the street and some stranger just coming up and punching you in the face. You know, it's like properly shocking in that sense of the word. And I, where do you get that in life? You don't get those experiences very often, do you?
No.
So, yeah.
I think that's fair enough. So I guess just to end, I suppose it's probably come across through what you said, but what do you love so much about swimming? Like, because often people go through phases of things, but you haven't really. You kind of, you've just continued with it for a lot of years. So yeah, what's the thing that kind of keeps you going?
There's a kind of community thing about swimming in a club that I love, which is why I've been swimming in a club for 20 years, although I'm a bit rubbish. There's a thing that everybody that, it's the same with any sport. Like, you know that the people that do it with you have the same mental thing in a way. But for me, it's not just about swimming in a club, it's just about generally swimming. I mean, I'm kind of short and dumpy and I kind of, you know, I'm not kind of tall and beautiful and elegant person. But when I get in the water, like, I'd like properly feel like it's like I'm in my element, like in that kind of really kind of corny way of saying, I just think, oh yeah, this is, and it's not even go for days without like doing it for whatever reason. You get back in, you just think, oh yeah, this is who I am. This is me.
Yeah.
This is, and it's not like I'm amphibious or anything, but I kind of genuinely do feel a bit like that.
Okay.
And it's not about it's not about being sporty.
Okay.
It's about because I can get into, I went to Berlin last week and I stayed in this hotel, posh hotel with a spa.
Yeah.
And it had like a tiny swimming pool. And I'm like, I wanted to go in the water and I was like, I don't need to swim. I don't need to crank out lengths.
Okay.
I'm like quite happy just like getting into the water and like swimming under the water and like looking up and floating on my back and playing.
Yeah.
But I feel like I like, it's my, it kind of feels a bit like my natural habitat.
Nice.
It's not, yeah, it's not a kind of, it's not a sport. There's no, I don't do it to keep fit or to be, you know, some people go, oh, I swim so I can eat cakes or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I do it because it feels like home.
Oh, that's lovely. Because the way you describe it in your writing, like, you know, a tough day at work or whatever, and then as soon as you get into the water, it all disappears. It's just a very beautiful way of talking about it. And actually, I just wanted to quickly come back to something you said right at the beginning about it being egalitarian.
Mm.
I think that's quite nice as well, because everyone's just in a swimming costume. Like, you can't see...
You can't tell anything.
Yeah, exactly. You can't see whether they're the CEO of whatever or, you know, or the cashier, you know, or whatever, a cleaner, whatever.
No, you can't. There are no social clues in what you wear when you're swimming, because actually you can't even see people's hair.
True.
So you can't tell if they're wearing a swimming cap or even if their hair's wet. You can't tell if they're a punk. Yeah. Or, you know, or they're kind of quite conservative, or
yeah.
there's nothing, no clues at all about somebody yeah. in any normal swimming pool.
It's almost like the pure you.
Yeah, yeah.
In a sense.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really nice. Well, I think, you know, I think your challenges are just brilliant. And I think it genuinely is a real lesson in kind of, you think you can't do something and then just gradually it becomes normal, and then you do it and you actually succeed. And I just think, you know, it's very uncomfortable in the process, but it's just what an amazing achievement, and loads of amazing achievements. So yeah, it's been really interesting chatting, and thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for letting me go on and on.
It was just brilliant. Thanks.
Thank you so much for listening to the episode. I hope you enjoyed my chat with Sally and learning about her crazy swimming adventures and challenges. I certainly really enjoyed chatting to her. I love her approach and her genuine love of swimming. I'll obviously provide links to the different swimming associations she referred to on the Live Beyond website, as well as links to her writing, which, as I mentioned, is quite simply brilliant. Thanks again for all of your support during these first 10 episodes. I do hope you've enjoyed them, and I'm really excited about recording the next episodes. So I think I'll just leave by saying, continue to be greater than you think possible, and push those boundaries. Bye.